This is Pure Decking, show number 391 for Thursday, May the 7th, 2020. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and the fact that I'm seriously considering building a suit of armor for when it happens. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have BSV.
Hello.
What are you drinking, BSV?
I have no clue.
Whatever's in the glass. Got it. Brave man. And we have Mr. Fox.
What's up?
What are you drinking, Fox?
A gin and tonic.
Ah, classy. And Madman.
They want to look into the Talos armor. It looks pretty badass.
Talos armor? Is this something I can reasonably construct without it looking like cosplay?
No. But if you can steal it or purchase it, it'd be fucking awesome. It's one of the next generation body armors the military's.
Oh, I see. Yeah, this is where they were trying to make an Iron Man suit.
Pretty much. Comes with night vision goggles and ballistic armor over pretty much the all of you. An exoskeletal section for it's supposed to increase how much you can lift and how long you can carry large loads, and it's air conditioned.
Well, I mean, if we could find it, there's probably only a couple of prototypes of the thing running around.
Yeah, like three prototypes, and they're expensive.
Yeah, see, I was thinking more something I could 3D print with some carbon fiber filled filament and then soak it in resin.
I think I saw a really cool plastic Iron Man. Need to get some stepper motors or something to lift up the visor the way that dude.
Oh, that's easy.
It looked cool, but it wouldn't be functional. What I'm looking at's actually, bulletproof and bomb resistant.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I could construct something that's bulletproof with 3D printers and, backyard engineering.
Not testing it.
Yeah.
But is it bear-proof?
Oh, no, the dude made that bear-proof suit in his backyard, and that was bulletproof and possibly bomb-resistant.
Let's face it, most things are just bullet-resistant anyway.
Well, it depends on the size of the bullet, too.
If you shot at it at the same time, about 50 times in the same spot, it's probably going to go through. But it takes several shots.
See, now, when I get a bigger place and can actually set up a machine shop, then we'll talk about worrying about something that's bulletproof. Right now, I'm just wanting something that I can reasonably deal with the the crazies who can't stand being under lockdown anymore.
Oh, and the Bear Man suit's pretty fun, too. They showed him being hit with a tree with it, and the tree actually knocked him back about, 10.
But he was fine.
Yeah, he got up. I mean, I'm not going to call the dude fine. He let somebody hit him with a tree. He's fucking crazy.
And a truck.
He was dead and less injured. He wasn't dead and not very injured. But he was not fine. He's obsessed with bears attacking him. He lives in the middle of a major fucking city. Got mental problems.
No.
I mean, the chances of you getting mauled by a bear are never actually zero.
Well, it depends on what type of bear we're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, that was stupid. What are you doing?
I kind of want to play Bear Force One.
You go ahead and do that. I'm not going to go cut that out in the middle of the show because it'll end up playing while we're trying to talk. But we can prep it for another. I used to have it on the soundboard, didn't I? Oh, well. Anyways, what are you drinking, Madman?
I am drinking Woodford Reserve, and when that gets empty, it may be switched over to Bullet Rye.
You're going fancier than I am. I'm just doing some Henry McKenna tonight. So it's cheap and doesn't taste terrible, which is kind of nice for just a drinking bourbon.
Well, doesn't taste terrible is great for anything. Generally, when it starts and, you know, tastes like crap, I'm like, yeah, I'll give this to someone that, you know, swings by, which is why I still have two pumpkin beers in my...
Well, I mean, anything's better than that Heaven's Hill that Static tricked me into buying. That stuff was rank.
Well, whenever he says it's good for $5 bourbon, I'm like,
yeah.
That is a statement.
Well, compared to other $5
bourbon, good for cleaning
bourbons,
shit off your driveway.
It wasn't bad.
Okay, well, you know, compared to just drinking acetone, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, you have to get a baseline at least there.
So I took some Lysol, put it in a syringe, as per the president's instructions, and actually the bourbon was better.
Both in the Only syringe slightly. And in my stomach.
I love everybody losing their shit over, oh, the president told everybody to drink bleach. You go watch the clip, and it's like, no, he just forgot he was giving a press conference and was just musing out loud, which is not great. Don't get me wrong. That's not exactly a quality you want in the world leader. But yeah, he just forgot where he was and just started rambling. It's just like, oh, no, that's what happened. I can't wait.
Maybe we can have giant sharks with lasers in their heads as part of the Navy. Yes,
or at least belligerent sea bass.
Can we, like, dig a giant moat and, like, fill it with sharks and lasers? I mean, I'm just like, you know, I can see him asking shit like that.
Right along the southern border.
I can't wait for the debates. I cannot wait for the presidential debates. You know, diarrhea of the mouth Trump versus I don't know who I am Biden. I mean, it's going to be comedy gold. Because Biden will forget. Biden will forget what he's talking about halfway through the debate, and Trump will just start making shit up. It'll be great. Probably about Biden, which would be even better. Go ahead, Madman. I cut you off.
I was going to say, on that happy note, what's the discussion topic?
Madman called for the rocket snail. I think that may be a first. It's from Business Insider. It's kind of a no-duh, but it's one of these things where it's just like, you're just now catching on to this now? More people seem to be watching porn on work devices, and it's a cybersecurity problem for employers.
That's because you're having me work from home.
That's the gist of the article, actually.
That way I'm both hard at work and hardly working.
Gross. Anyways. Jim, are you hard at work? Yes, sir. You're fired.
It depends who was in the office that day.
Watching porn at the office used to be off limits.
Used to be.
It's
still off limits. I'm just not in the office.
That line alone, it's like, I've had to clean up some computers before. I don't think that's as true as you think it is.
Oh, no.
You know, I used to work at a university, and you'd go in a professor's office and have to clean up, you know, a computer and be like, oh, God, what are they doing in this office? Oh, God, why am I not, you know, why am I touching this keyboard? And from that day on, I was packing rubber gloves in my toolkit. You learn that one real quick. If you work on computers, rubber gloves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to know what people are doing with those machines. So.
Really don't.
Especially if they have an office and they can close the door and That door doesn't have windows.
Woof.
Watching porn.
I suggest any site other than E-Fox.
Motherless.
That joke could keep going, but we're just going to stop and keep going. It's like, do we make the joke and admit that we know those sites exist? It's like, because, you know, when you're, what's lower than motherless? Madman, what's lower than motherless?
I already threw mine out there. You're not getting me in here twice.
BSV, what's lower than motherless?
I know nothing. I'm just going to go over here now.
It's going to be like, it's like the Muslim dating site where they had all the pictures of the Mortal Kombat characters. anyways. Watching porn at the office used to be off limits, but what happens when your living room becomes your new office? Dude, your living room?
Webs.
Whatever. Millions of people's personal and professional habits have shifted dramatically amid the Wuhan flu outbreak, according to a sweeping new... Oh, for anybody who hasn't onto the joke, when I remember to do it, I'm going to be replacing COVID-19 with one of the funny names because I'm tired of it. So, anyways. According to a sweeping new study from the cybersecurity firm Kaspersky, among other findings, the study found that people working from home were quite likely to view porn on the same device they use for their jobs. And cybersecurity experts say that's not safe for work.
That's some fine police work there, Lou.
Kaspersky surveyed more than 6,000 people working from home across the globe about their online habits in April. Among respondents who reported watching more adult content than before, they started working remotely. 51% acknowledged doing so on the same device they used for work. Nearly 20% said they used a device provided by their employer to watch porn. Now, these are people who responded to a survey.
Yeah.
In other words,
why would you...
This is how many people owned up to it.
Now, I'm nice enough. If they would give me my a work computer, I wouldn't watch porn on it. I'd be nice that nice.
So are you remoting into like a Citrix session or something, or?
I'm remoting in. I don't know if I want to say which software we use.
But you've got like a remote desktop you're getting into.
Yeah, okay. I'm not working. Everything I'm doing isn't on my machine.
Okay. And by the way, Madman, that's the correct way to answer that question. It's like, I'm not telling you what software I'm using. It's a remote desktop of some sort.
Yeah, I'm doing remote desktop into my work machine, which is kind of weird because I have like three monitors set up sometimes, usually two or three. But whenever I remote in, one monitor is my work monitor, the other two are on my home machine. So I have stuff running on my home machine, generally not porn. But I got to remember where the mouse is.
And also remember what's on your clipboard.
It's going to make things real awkward when you forget you're on a conference call.
I just stay muted on those. Oh, one day if I ever forget to mute. What are those weird sounds? I'm sorry, the Klingons are attacking again. One moment, I've got to pause something. I've got to figure out which one's more interesting. I meant important.
Yeah, I got bored with the meeting and started playing Tetris, guys. Sorry. I mean, anyways. Oh, wait. I actually was doing that one. I bought a Switch Lite, so I was sitting there playing Tetris 99 during several calls where it just got stupid. It's like, well, you guys fight this out. I'm going to play some Tetris.
Yeah, get back to me when you're stopped being dumb. So I'm going to be here a while.
Yeah, that's actually kind of
when you suddenly find out five of the other people in the meeting are also in the match of Tetris.
Yeah. Did you hear somebody say, damn it, just as you knock somebody else out? Wait a minute. The trend raises red flags for employers aiming to protect their information. The shift to remote work is already a cybersecurity landmine that has increased the number of targets for hackers looking to infiltrate a company, and porn sites, which host media-rich pages and lots of pop-up ads, are notorious for transmitting malware. There's also a history of hackers using people's porn browsing history as a weapon against them. A 2017 blackmail scam targeted people's work emails with "We know what you watched" messages to try to extort them. That's still going on. 2 years earlier, hackers used information from the data breach of the extramarital dating site Ashley Madison for blackmail. Don't use your real names on these sites, people.
Yeah.
That only works if you're ashamed of what you do.
Or
if somebody tries to blackmail, just ask them for recommendations.
That or you just be like Madman and respond with "Kneel before my lack of shame." I mean, you know, whatever. But porn sites aren't necessarily the riskiest domains. Malicious ads are just as likely to appear on e-commerce or media sites, according to a Cisco security report. Beck Kaspersky's findings illustrate a large overlap between people's personal browsing and their work. Andrei Evdomnikov? I tried. Kaspersky's chief information security officer recommends that companies put forward clear standards for sites, apps, and messaging services that employees are allowed to use on work devices. It is necessary to find a balance between user convenience, business necessity, and security. That guy said in a statement to Business Insider. To achieve this, a company should provide access to services based on the principle of only supplying minimal necessary privileges. No shit. If you're working from home, experts recommend basic steps to keep your devices secure. Or, I don't know, buy a second laptop to use when you're spanking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that would involve turning on a second laptop. And sometimes you just have a sexual emergency.
I have no response to that. Go get an iPad or something then, or Android tablet. I don't care. They're not that expensive. Seriously, you can get on eBay and you can get a second-hand business laptop for about $100. That's good. Like a ThinkPad T420 or something, you can get those around $100 for the ones that don't have an NVIDIA chip in them. They're just an Intel. And if all you want's a beater machine, oh.
Damn, so, Johnny.
So going to be cut out.
If all you want's a... if you just need something you can just, you know, wipe up and throw away... Wait a minute. I'm not getting out of that. Okay, fine, fuck it. If you just need a laptop to, you know, look at horrible with and you don't care
you
to
need a wank bank.
There you go. You know, go get you an old laptop off eBay that's not trash. You know, just like an old ThinkPad or something that's decent from a, you know, an old business line machine. Dell has some old business line machines that are worth getting to. Load Linux on it, so you know, don't put anything important on it. And that way when you look at the naughty and the horrible, great, just format the thing every once in a while.
Even easier if you use a live CD.
There you go. Tails. Fucking run Tails. Yep. Just don't put a hard drive
run in. Run Tails to get some tail.
But oh, wait, I have a soundboard. What am I doing? Where's the rim shot?
Oh, Puppy Linux. I used to do that.
Yeah, Puppy Linux would work. Or Nopix. Anybody remember that one? Oh, yeah, DPView and the IRC has a very good point. It's secondhand from a business. Anytime you buy secondhand anything, take alcohol to it. Clean it.
Yeah, wear gloves first. Don't get herpes from your laptop.
Actually, before COVID broke out, I bought this big case of the little alcohol wipes that like they're supposed to use for syringes and shit. Those things are fantastic for cleaning up small electronics.
Yep.
So I've got a ton of them. And yeah, I mean, I've put plastic through the dishwasher, cases from like electronics and shit. I've scrubbed things down with alcohol. I mean, it's just what you got to do if you're buying anything secondhand, right? And like Fox said, wear gloves. But Yeah, don't use your work computer for that kind of shit. If you are having to use your own computer for work, one, you know, ask your company why they're not providing you with the appropriate equipment to work from home. You know, if they're expecting you to work from home, they should be providing you the equipment to do so. I'm not going to argue that your company ought to buy you a phone, although that's an argument that people have, but if they're expecting you to work from home, they ought to be providing a machine. Now, if you're remoting in to a machine, see, this is where things get interesting, where it's like, oh, no, we're just going to do, you know, Windows remote desktop or something for everybody. We'll just you can just remote into your work machine from home on your home computer and work that way. Well, short-term emergencies, like the way the Woohoo Flu stuff came up, I can kind of see that. But that means you need some kind of a VPN client on other people's machines, and that gets weird, especially if your network team hasn't segmented the VPN out, because now you've got random, you know, BYOD devices connecting into your VPN, and depending on where they drop you on the network, that could be a problem. And that's the same problem as, you know, people using the work machine to go to, you know, Pornhub or whatever, is that if that machine gets something on it and then connects into your network, congratulations, you've just lost trust on your entire network, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to do some kind of client isolation. I know our parent company, they have a pretty interesting setup where you can get to webtops and then get to a remote desktop. And that kind of a setup through like either a Citrix or a VMware Horizon or something like that, where you're doing it through a web browser and it's kind of a sandboxed one, and you can put some requirements on it so that you're not allowed to connect unless you meet a couple of scenarios. That's not so terrible, especially when you've got people sharing their personal machines, right? Because then at least you don't have a full-on network pipe. It's just an SSL tunnel through a web browser. But even that can get piggybacked if you have somebody targeting, right? Most of the time, your generic malware isn't going to be good enough to get through something like that. But if you've actually got somebody on the other end attacking you, see, and that's the thing, is you've got to open up these avenues for people to work from home, so now you've got to worry about people guessing passwords or getting passwords from hacks and shit like that. And actually, that would be something that would concern me more, rather than a virus on an end user's machine getting through their connection into the, you know, like, okay, Madman, you said you were remoting into work, so I'm assuming you're doing some kind of a VPN on your machine, so I'm just going to pick on you. If your machine had a virus on it, the likelihood of that virus being able to spread through your VPN connection back to the office is actually fairly low, even if they gave you a full-on tunnel, right? Because it's just the way those things work, and usually they're not designed to look. However, the likelihood of that virus stealing your username and login and your password to get back into your network, especially if your company is not using, say, multi-factor anywhere, is quite high. And now somebody else with God knows what can log in as you, get into your network, and then, you know, giving your company a bad time. Right?
Yeah. And depending on what permissions I still have, I've been in enough different departments that they could find some interesting things.
Well, and that's the thing where they're talking about least privilege, right? You know, you should only have the privileges necessary, or entitlements, if you're using modern lingo, necessary to perform your job. Like, you should, you know, your job requires you to do X, Y, and Z. You should only have the permissions to do X, Y, and Z. And it's a pain in the ass to maintain that correctly. It truly is. Because and the biggest problem I have trying to do that is getting managers to tell me what X, Y, and Z are.
You know? Oh, they just want to say, give them all of Bob's permissions, because...
Well, Bob can do it, but Bob started in two different departments, you know, three jobs ago, and he has rights across half the damn company. But Bob never has any problems, so mirror Bob's access. So it's like, yeah, but Bob's access is not correct for that job.
Well, I will say my job's pretty good with the least access. When I switched job roles the last time.
The companies you and I work for, Madman, have to be, because they don't get a choice in the matter. But the new company the old company, fuck it. My old company got bought out. And so now I'm in a much more heavily regulated environment. So we get a lot of people who don't understand that the world has changed, and it's frustrating as hell.
The beatings will continue until password security improves.
The beatings will continue until I get tired. Anyways.
No, because it does make one of the interns do it.
Rats. Wow. Okay. So Rats is an interesting comment here in the IRC. He's saying he's curious about what kind of valuable information could you really get from a single random user's login. So everyone in your company is going to have access to the printers, first and foremost, right? Because everybody needs to print. A lot of times, companies do not do proper least privilege. You know, I'm bitching about it. Madman's in the same heavily regulated environment that I'm now in, so he's got a company that's used to it. But the truth is, most companies suck at it. So a lot of times they'll have file servers that everyone's allowed to access it. I have argued with people in accounting who said, I don't know who's going to need access to this information. Just put everyone rights on it. And I said, I can't do that. That's payroll information. Well, I don't know who needs it. Well, you need to find out then, don't you? Well, why can't you do that? Because it's not my data. Yeah. So the other thing is, a lot of companies, believe it or not, still let their users have local admin rights on their workstations. It's, well, we don't want to bother, having a help desk manage software installs and printers and drives. So we'll just let all the users be local admin so they can install what they need to do their job. We're enabling users by technology rather than blocking them. But it's like, no, you're actually just setting it up so that you're going to have somebody cleaning machines from now until the end of time. But management likes this idea of, we're enabling the users by giving them more rights than they need so they can self-service. No, you're just setting up a tire fire and handing an idiot the fuse. Anyways, but
that's because coming from management, this had a whole lot of not my problems to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And then I could just yell at people to be more efficient. Why is IT taking so long to fix this? Because you made it impossible to manage. That's a you problem. Do a better job. That's the usual answer you get from management when they don't understand the problem they've created is, well, it just sounds like you're being lazy. Shit like that. It's like, no, mm-hmm. You just don't understand what you're talking about.
But IT won't let me use all the toolbars I like in my browser window.
I've had that argument. I actually had a manager argue with me because I was blocking spam. He thought these were important messages, and he wanted to make sure everyone on his team got them. It's fucking spam! It's like, this is mass market bullshit. You don't want this. No, I've signed up my entire team for these notices. These are important. No, they're not. They're boner pill ads. Well, we occasionally get important messages from that same server. You can't block that.
But everybody in the team needs to know about this prince that has money problems.
The problem was that the boner pill ads was really a thing. He just wasn't looking at them. He just assumed, because of the business we were in, that this is important marketing information. We need to stay abreast of the business. They're boner pill ads. They have nothing to do with our business.
Well, how else am I going to stay hard at work?
Nice callback. Very well done, yeah. Sir. But, for most companies, the important data is not what your domain admin has. It's not what your CEO gets into. It's what your secretaries have. It's what your middle-level accountant has access to. It's what your file clerks have access to. Because if I'm stealing information, let's say I'm doing corporate espionage, I'm going to want to monitor calendars. I'm going to want to capture conference call numbers so that I can dial into other conference calls and record them or disrupt them and see what my competition is doing and then sell that information to other companies they're competing against. Or
I mean, just as simple as getting your corporate address book and then being able to spoof, you know, oh, hey, the CEO wants you to run this application on your computer that you have admin rights on.
We fired a guy a couple of years ago for selling our company's address book to a marketing site. They downloaded our damn gal and sold it to a marketing site for 5 free leads.
Wow.
So it wasn't even like they were doing some kind of insider trading thing. They were just an idiot. It's like, oh, well, if I download this and send it to this guy, they'll send me leads. No, that's a spamming company. They're going to send you garbage leads, and they're going to ruin our email servers for the next 5 years.
So how hard did you beat him before he was terminated?
They wouldn't let me near him for that very reason. I get to use the excuse, I'm not allowed to interact with the users. You don't want me talking to the users. It's like, why? Because I'm honest with them. Oh. It's like, well, what's wrong with that? Oh, you think they're idiots. Hey, you're on to it.
Think? No. I don't think they're idiots.
I know.
I know they're idiots.
Oh. This morning, I was in one of the chat rooms at work because we were talking about some crazy-ass ask we got. It's like, yeah, can we just get a URL put on this database and made public so we can integrate it with Salesforce? What? No. What?
No.
It's like, yeah, they just said we need a URL. Okay, and how are we going to make sure it's only Facebook, or not Facebook, Salesforce getting into this? Well, I don't know. Okay, what kind of service account were you? Oh, no, I don't want a username and password on there. That sounds hard. Oh, for fuck's sake. So, yeah, it's it was a fun conversation.
Did you try asking him what his quest was and what his favorite color was as well?
No, but I was PMing some people on my team. It's like, do you remember back in the day when everyone thought the cloud was insecure? As opposed to today where we know it's insecure, but everybody thinks it isn't. So, but yeah, if you're looking for data to harvest, and again, you know, it's situational, right? If you just want the address book to go sell to a spam site, yeah, anybody can probably pull the gal, truthfully. If you're wanting to send spam, everyone at the company probably has an email address. Basic shit like that. And then it's, you know, looking at who have you got, right? So, okay, you've got some middle-level guy in accounting. Maybe you can get bank account numbers and transfer numbers. Maybe you can take a bill of lading, or you can take a service order, pull the PDF down, Photoshop the PDF, put your bank account number in there in the to pay field, and re-upload it back into the accounting system and see if you get paid or not. Because guess what? That's a common scam. Another thing you can do if you get some middle-level employees access is you can go in there and just watch their email. Don't do anything. Don't interact. Just read. And get a feel for what their day job is. What business are they doing? Who are they interacting with? And then, when can you slip into that conversation, either as them, you know, messaging somebody else through their email address, or spoofing an email address from somebody they regularly correspond with to send them instructions to pay a consulting company that nobody's ever heard of, or, you know, change the wire transfer instructions for bill pay, or, you know, sign this contract for services. Or even something as simple, and there are companies that do this, as getting in there and going in and clicking on a whole bunch of ads, basically using them as an ad farm, right? If you can get a bot on their machine, and you can get a whole bunch of these corporate machines going out and clicking on ads all in the evening when nobody's using them, you know, and this isn't even talking about doing things like escalating up your privileges. On any modern operating system, basically punch into Google Windows privilege escalation or Linux privilege escalation or Mac privilege escalation, you're going to find something. Now, that may or may not be applicable to your situation, depending on what kind of controls they have in place. But in many cases, you're going to find a way to escalate up to admin. And from there, you can install whatever you want on the machine or start pivoting out through the network. Maybe I get a hold of, you know, some middle-level file clerk who doesn't have anything useful, but I can send email as that file clerk, and maybe I can get the CEO's secretary to click on a link so that I can pwn her machine. And now that I've pwned her machine, I now have access to everyone's email, because of course the CEO has, you know, the CEO doesn't read their own email or do their own calendar, right?
And now it doesn't even take mid-level to do a lot of harm to stuff.
Oh no.
Bill processing isn't done by mid-level people. They're entry-level jobs. So if you're working at a pharmacy, billing insurance companies, pharmacist isn't doing that. Sales clerk that they just hired last week, they're going to be doing that.
And if you have the time, if you take the time to set up a fake insurance company, how many payments can you collect out of that, you know, person's access before somebody notices it and goes to shut it down? And, or can you make several payments and then close it out and clean up your tracks so they don't know who to go investigate? Shit like this happens. You got to remember, when you attack a company like that, you're not just attacking their, and techies fall into this, right, a lot. They get into, you know, they get into this headspace of, well, I'm going to take over their computers. Okay, great. I've got a bunch of computers. What can I do with that? I don't know. I can host websites on their machines or some shit like that. No, 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 no. You got to stop thinking like a tech person. And now, what does this person do every day with this machine? What do they handle? What is their job? And how can I abuse their access? It's going to be different for every person you get, but go ahead, BSV.
I was just going to say, according to the last article, well, it's porn.
Yeah, you just
used you get some great recommendations out of it, maybe.
You just used it as a fantastic proxy to look at the really, really bad stuff. Actually, when I worked at the school, I would routinely find people's in server machines that had been pwned and IRC servers and file share servers had been set up on. I mean, that was normal. It's, and, you know, that's not even looking at what they had. It's been long enough. I can tell this story. So there was a bug in PHP MyAdmin that if you knew what you were doing, you could get code execution on any box that had it. And we had the logs from a faculty member's machine where they had set up a web server just on their machine, right? And, you know, they had PHP MyAdmin and it was vulnerable. So we knew the attacker's IP address, but they weren't doing anything at the moment. And it was like Czechoslovakia or something like that. You know, some crazy-ass place. And it's a school, so I don't have strong controls on the firewall, and I can't go do geographic blocks because you got people from all over the country, from all over the world there. Like, at one point, I wanted to block China and then found out, oh, no, we've got a sister school in China. You can't do that. it's like, oh, great. So anyways, so I had the IP address. And I threw up, went into my my monitoring system and basically put an IP, a TCP dump for that IP address across the pipe. So I would get any traffic going to or from that address from any of the machines on the network. Went home for the night, came back the next day. And that IP had scanned a good chunk of our network, including some of our data center, and had found a server that had PHP MyAdmin on it. And then I discovered our database admins were using PHP MyAdmin. It's like, good God, why? It's like, just install a fucking SQL client on your desktop and connect to it that way. Why are you using PHP MyAdmin? Anyways, but that point aside. So yeah, apparently this was, you know, publicly accessible if you could find the URL. And they got code execution on this box. Now, this box was hosting some software, in-house written software, that was used to handle student bill pay. So, like, this is where you could pay your tuition online. So this software had access to all kinds of shit, right? Well, they got code execution on the box, but because the person doing the attack didn't really understand what they had or what they were doing, this box, just by dumb luck, didn't have the GCC build tools installed on it. So what this attacker was doing was, one, I logged all their traffic, so I had their FTP login, because they got another box that they did get their bot on. They were trying to spread their bot, and their bot was an SSH brooding bot. So it would then go out and start trying to brute SSH passwords onto other servers. Kind of dumb bot, really, but it's what they were doing. And the way their code worked, it was actually kind of cool, was it injected a URL into phpMyAdmin to go pull down, to load this PHP file from a remote server. There, it was the same server as their FTP server, because it also had a web server on it, and all that was on it was this one PHP file. This PHP file would then start injecting through the execute command in MySQL. It would start building a C file on the hard disk through the database server. And this C file would compile up, and that would be your bot. So on this very important server, when I go to investigate it, the code injection in phpMyAdmin absolutely happened. Pulling down the remote PHP file absolutely happened. That executed, causing MySQL to build the C file. Absolutely happened. C file couldn't compile. They could not build their bot. Now, this is a server that processed credit card transactions, that processed student bill pay, that had access to the back end system for doing accounting. Their bot didn't build, so they moved on. They stopped. They left it alone after that. And moreover, I had to log into their server because I saw their code execute and captured all of it, and then had their source code. Their source code was supposed to get deleted by the C code after the compilation, but because it bombed, it never finished. Right? You can look at the PHP file. It's supposed to delete itself after it builds the executable to cover its tracks. It was supposed to run logstomp too, but again, it didn't get that far. It was supposed to pull down and run logstomp. So for one thing, I remoted into their FTP server and yanked down all their code, made a zip file called Bad Guy Walmart because I thought it was funny. I think I told Madman about it at the time. Did I tell you the Bad Guy Walmart joke at the time, Madman?
Yep.
Okay. And then reported the server to Shadow Server so that they could do whatever with it. And after that, I never saw it hit us again, so I didn't really much care. And I got to yell at the database admins for putting phpMyAdmin on a server. So it's like, why? But anyways, so yeah, we basically got lucky. Didn't have to worry about any of this other sensitive crap on there. And then I went back through the logs because for the last couple of weeks to make sure nobody else had hit that vulnerability, which they hadn't. And it's just like, okay, well, we're actually good just because the hackers didn't look at what they had. They were just trying to get their bot out. They weren't paying attention to what they got into. You had code execution on that box. Okay, you couldn't build GCC, but you probably could have done 100 other things. You were running PHP executables, or you were running PHP code. You could have easily thrown a shell on there, gotten into the box, and started digging, but you didn't.
Yeah, you're giving them more credit than they're not just some script kiddie throwing.
Well, that's exactly what it was. And that's my point, is that when you talk about getting a login or access to a company machine, if it's a bot, it's going to spread malware or it's going to start sending spam. If it's an actual attacker who's serious about maybe doing harm to that company for one reason or another, hacktivism, or maybe they're just picking a target because they think they've got money to burn and they can blackmail them. That's the other thing they do too, is they just, you know, go for the whole crypto locker thing, right? Encrypt the hard drive, say, if you want, or if encrypt anything they have access to in the network, you know, you want your data back, give us $100,000.
Yeah.
You know, they'll waste half of that money muling it and hiding its source and laundering it, and then, you know, the company probably get their data back. Usually, I hate to put it like this because it's not always true, usually when you have a hacking group get in and lock up a company like that and the company pays, they'll give them their data back. They'll give them the decryption key, or they'll you know, give them their stuff back. If it's a serious group, if it's group kiddies running malware and, you know, what was it? Crypto Locker and the oops, your files have been encrypted or whatever that malware was. I'm forgetting what it's called. Mm-hmm. Usually that stuff, you're not getting your data back, even if you pay. Those are scams. They're just, they're just, you know, they're trashing your machine because they don't fucking care. It's no skin off their nose if they trash your machine. They're just hoping that you're dumb enough to go put the money into the Bitcoin account to try to get your data back because they know you're desperate. And the fact that they probably didn't back up the data key, they probably have no way to give you your data back because they, all they really did was trash your hard drive and then said, oh, look, we can fix it for you if you pay us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Damn, we're 45 minutes in and we haven't touched the second story.
Moving on.
I didn't realize we'd been rambling that long.
This happens when you get locked up in a house for a long period.
Well, you would know about locking people up in your house, wouldn't you, BSV?
We don't talk about that.
Especially not live on air.
Okay, but are you calling me old? Damn it, they did it at work the other day, too. It's like, why are you guys like this? Because you're old. Fuck! When did that happen?
It's not me that are wrong. The children are wrong.
Second story. Yeah, don't let me tell old stories from security days.
Well, I didn't think you had that much bourbon yet.
I haven't! Not really.
Yet here we are.
Well, okay, a lot by my standards, but, you know. Admittedly, a lot by my standards, damn near killed Big, but, you know, hey, whatever.
Well, Big also tried to drink the entire bar.
Yeah, but we did.
Yeah, but there was like 20 of us, and there was one Big.
I felt bad for him, but we've had, you know, comedy material ever since.
Yeah.
Make fun of Laser too, but well, whatever. He didn't do it as bad as Big.
No,
he has the good sense to get sick much sooner than that. Second article: Facebook removes accounts linked to the QAnon conspiracy theory. Facebook says it has removed several groups, accounts, and pages linked to QAnon, taking action for the first time against the far right. Is QAnon far right? I thought they were just crazy.
Everything's far right.
Yeah, okay. Against the far right U.S. conspiracy theory circulated among supporters of President Donald Trump. The social media giant made the announcement Tuesday as part of its monthly briefing on coordinated inauthentic behavior on its platform. Oh, they're defining it as inauthentic behavior. That's scary. Ministry of Truth calling. That's Facebook's term for fake accounts run with the intent of disrupting political elections and society. Isn't that the point of the internet, is disrupting society?
I thought it was to connect people and let you communicate and watch cat videos.
I always thought it was for free shit and porn, but, you know, hey, whatever. That's Facebook terms. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. In addition to the QAnon accounts, Facebook also removed accounts linked to VDare, a U.S. website known for posting anti-immigrant content, as well as accounts in Russia, Iran, Mauritania, Myanmar, and the country of Georgia. I like how they specified that as opposed to the state. It's like, and Georgia, the state, not the country. QAnon is a right-wing conspiracy theory centered on the baseless belief that Trump is waging a secret campaign against enemies in the deep state and a child sex trafficking ring run by satanic pedophiles and cannibals.
What, no lizard people?
The last time I looked into QAnon, it was like really, really out there, you know, with the, like, you know, 6D level chess that all the politicians and agencies were playing. And I mean, it's, calling it far right is being unfair to people on the far right. It's just, out there. Entertaining as hell to read, though. And that's the thing, is I don't know how much of QAnon was serious and how much of it was just people writing a alternate reality fan fiction. I mean, because it kind of read like it. I mean,
you hope for 50-50, but yeah.
So, yeah, the conspiracy theory first emerged in a dark corner of the internet, 4chan. They're not
that
saying
hacker,
4chan.
4chan, out of the
but
gear.
That's got to be what it is. It's like the first emerged in a dark corner of the internet. Where's the button? Where's the button? But it's been creeping into the mainstream political arena. Trump has retweeted QAnon promoting accounts, and its followers flocked to the presidential rallies wearing clothing and hats with the QAnon symbols and slogans. Oh no, Trump retweeted something. Pretty sure he does that to like damn near anything that like looks good for him.
it's like, things that don't.
Trump retweeting something has no bearing whatsoever. Just means he saw something he liked and hit the button. You people are assuming a decision was made there as opposed to an impulse. At least it's not a porn
I
video.
I thought all of his tweets were just randomly
probably.
The keyboard.
For all I know, he's rolling a potato across the keyboard. I don't know. Facebook said it found the QAnon activity as part of its investigations into suspected coordinated inauthentic behavior ahead of the 2020 presidential election. We are making progress rooting out this abuse. It's not abuse. It's just okay. But as we've said before, it's an ongoing effort. The company has said it's in its April report on the coordinated activity that means building better technology, hiring more people, and working more closely with law enforcement, security experts, and other companies. Social media research firm Graphica, which receives funding from Facebook, said in a concurrent report Tuesday that the QAnon network promoted conspiracy theories and tried to sell merchandise, oh no, such as T-shirts, using Facebook. God forbid they sell T-shirts on Facebook. I'm sorry. They get so worked up over this shit, right? And it's like, it's a bunch of guys having fun. It's alternate reality fan fiction. You might have a handful of people who are taking it seriously. But how many people are out there wearing a QAnon hat or shirt to take the piss out of it at a Trump rally? Anyways. Network focused primarily on the Q conspiracy theory, but dabbled in others around the 5G wireless networks, the U.S. presidential elections, Bill Gates, and the coronavirus, Graphica said. The research firm found activity related on Twitter as well, but noted that in itself such activity may not have violated Twitter's rules. Twitter allows users to post under fake names. Those monsters! Twitter said it finds information... Operation campaigns that can be reliably attributed
user
to state
channel
activity. We lost Fox. It removes them. But it said Facebook shared details of the accounts it removed, but Twitter didn't find anything to conclude that an information operation took place on its platform. And good on Twitter for not just banning shit because Facebook said to.
But normally you try not to listen to your competitors.
Well...
I know Twitter is still claiming to be a platform, and so is like YouTube. Is Facebook, has it admitted to being a publisher, or is it still trying to claim platform
status?
They're
still trying to claim platform. But,
and that, I think, would be the issue that I have with this, is if you're a platform, you're supposed to let shit fly, and people need to figure out for themselves what is stupid as fuck and what you need to pay attention to.
And, I mean, again, how many of these are just people having fun making shit up, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's... You're kind of missing the point if you're losing your mind over this stuff, right? And, yeah, the fact that they're banning people because they subscribe to conspiracy theories. Why? Why even
just treat it like
attention?
The Babylon Bee or the Onion.
Yeah. Just, you know, shove it off to the side and let it happen and ignore it. So what? But, you know, Facebook, I mean, and the reason I'm talking about it is because Facebook is doing all kinds of, you know, filtering and you know, YouTube's doing it too with the whole, you know, boomer and tumor thing where, okay, there's a really fun video by the guy called, channel is Red Reans Recording. He's got a OP-1 little synthesizer things. He sampled the crazy preacher trying to blow away the virus, right? And he made a song out of it. It's fun. It's kind of cool. The guy did a good job of it, actually. And, you know, right below his video is this big flag YouTube put up about how, oh, if you want real information about the virus, you have to go to the WHO, and, you know, this video may be inaccurate and all this other stuff. It's like the dude remixed a sample. What the fuck? So this whole Ministry of
Their Truth, algorithm is trying its best.
This whole Ministry of Truth stuff is dumb. And you're going to end up, I would like to see you just run users off your platform and have people start using something that's not as, you know, brain dead. But I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like this whole, you know, Facebook and Google deciding what truth is and what you're allowed to say. That just doesn't seem like a something that's going to end well for me. Anyways.
Got a third story?
I do. Next one is from Fossbytes.com. Imagine a situation where you could be jailed or fined if you do not install a particular app. Well then, your nightmare is going to be true. You're going to be true or not? Installing the Argoya Setu application that has been made, or not installing it has been made a punishable offense. This is in India. As per the latest reports, people living in Noida and Greater Noida will have to pay a fine of 1,000 rubles if they have not installed India's homemade communist lung herpes tracing app on their smartphone. It's called Aarogya Setu. People who will not have, or people who will, this is written strangely, I think it's translated. People who will not have the Argoria Setu app will be booked under Section 188 of the IPC. The rule will be applicable not only to residents of Noida and Greater Noida, but also to those who are traveling to the mentioned cities for any purpose. Section 188 of the IPC says that a person is found to be disobeying the orders of public servants, they can be fined 1,000 rubles or jailed up to 6 months. After a person is booked under Section 188, the judicial magistrate will decide whether he or she has to pay a fine or will be jailed.
Do you need to install this even if you don't have a smartphone?
Well, I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, I don't have a phone. Well, we're just going to take that money from you anyways. How much is that in non-monopoly dollars? Google says it's $13.23.
Oof.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
That might be a lot of money over there, dude. I don't know. Let's see. It's a contact tracing app, which means it's monitoring your location and who you get near. Let's see.
I'm going to go with drug sales are going to be down in India shortly.
Well, I'm just thinking people who start leaving their phones at home. However, the police officials of Noida and Greater Noida have said that they will let go of people who agree to download the app in front of them at the time of checking. Officials will also provide Wi-Fi hotspots to download the app. People will be fined or jailed only if they don't install the app after repeated warnings. The police will regularly check that people have installed the app or not while patrolling. Yeah, again, what if you don't have a phone on you? On one side effect, Indian authorities are forcing citizens to install the app irrespective of their connection with the contaminant zones. On the other side, French hacker Robert Baptiste with Twitter name Elliot Anderson has found flaws in the app. As per Elliot Anderson's tweet, medical data of 90 million Indians is at risk due to the app. However, the Indian Computer Emergency Response Team soon established communications with the hacker to know the issue. Yeah, this is strangely written. So, anyways, yeah, in India, you can be arrested for not installing the tracking app. It's just, damn. I mean, again, this doesn't answer the question. Oh, I dropped my phone. It's broken. I didn't want to carry a broken phone with me. What are they going to do, arrest you for not having a phone?
All right, Lynn, charge you $13.
Do they give you a phone?
Yeah, would they give me a phone?
No, they'll just tag you with a tracker.
Ear clip version?
Ear clip or injection version.
So apparently, you know, but India has a law that lets them fine people for not following the orders of a public official, which that law scares me more than the you must install an app on your phone problem. So
you will give me $500, otherwise we will fine you $800.
Or what if you're just a pervy old dude and you say, nope, it's you're going to be fined or go to jail if you don't, you know, take off your clothes and dance around a little, you know?
Please show Bob's in Virginia.
God. That's probably how they'd say it, too. Oh, well. Next article. This is from the Independent, Dakota.UK. Children's computer game Roblox Insider tricked by hacker for access to users' data. A hacker who bribed... Okay, that's not a trick. That's a different thing. A hacker who bribed a worker for the online video game Roblox managed to gain access to the personal information of a smaller number of users, the ability to change passwords and email addresses, and allocate in-game currency. The hacker first paid an insider to look up data about users, then targeted a customer support representative. They said they did it to prove a point to the company. Speaking to Motherboard under the condition of anonymity, the hacker could also change security settings, enact bans, and steal items from other users. Roblox is a free-to-play game that lets you play, create, be anything you can imagine, according to its description on the Microsoft Store. It's available on a number of platforms, blah, 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 blah. So, the reason I wanted to talk about this is you occasionally have people say, oh, I don't mind Google having my data, or I trust Apple. Well, as a company, they might be fine, but what about every individual employee who might have access? You know, how many of them would take a bribe?
Depends on how much the bribe is.
Well, and that's the thing, though, right? You know, when you talk about all these companies collecting up your data, every app collecting your data, you know, you have to fill out a form and make a login for every fucking website you go to anymore. It's like, okay, you know, even if all the people setting this stuff up have the best of intentions, how do they know they're not going to employ an alcoholic or somebody who just makes poor decisions or somebody who just wants to buy a Switch on eBay and takes a bribe or a gift? Or just is stupid and falls for a trick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that they targeted Roblox is just kind of funny. But, you know, other than that. Next article. BSV, were you going to say something? I saw your thing light up.
No, I must have bumped the mic or something.
Oh, yeah. I was just as I was turning my head, I thought I saw that, so I guess I was wrong. Next one is from iamore.com. Many users have been reporting issues with iOS apps like TikTok, Spotify, Pinterest, and Tinder. Reports across Twitter and through Down Detector show that many popular apps on the iPhone have been crashing for the past couple of hours. According to a new report from The Verge, the issue seems to be caused by a bug with a Facebook SDK. Now, this has already been fixed. It was only going for a couple of hours. You have a lot of apps that are dependent on this Facebook SDK. And if Facebook fixed it that quickly, it means it was server-side. Because otherwise, every single one of these apps would have had to push out an update to break. So, the point is, a lot of these apps are dependent on Facebook in the background. And if they're dependent on Facebook in the background, do you think they're not collecting data?
If you do, I have a bridge to sell you.
Yeah, really. So, whenever you see a whole bunch of apps break because of the Facebook SDK, makes you wonder if those are apps you should be using. Just saying.
I'm going to go with no, because you need to know where your information is. So, if I'm thinking app company B is reputable enough to have my info, I find out that they're giving it to other companies that I didn't okay, then they're not trustworthy.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Couldn't use them.
So, next article is from apnews.com, and this one was actually sent to me by High Tech Luddite on the subreddit. This is a follow-up to the Georgia copyright dispute, where they were trying to claim copyright on some of their laws. Remember how pissed I was about that idea? It's like, no, you can, or maybe it was judicial opinions, but it was one of these things where it's like, that's the law. You cannot hide the law behind copyright and demand people pay to see it. Because that idea really pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like WIM laws are bad enough. WIM laws that you can't see unless you pay for them? Come on. So, High Tech Luddite sent me this follow-up. Supreme Court rules against Georgia in the copyright dispute.
Is that the state or the country?
I'm assuming the state. Supreme Court ruled Monday against the state of Georgia in a copyright lawsuit over annotations to its legal code, finding they cannot be copyrighted. WIM. WHIM. WIM. As in, they're only enforced whenever the police or the politicians feel like it. So this is where you write a law where, you know, something dumb. Like, it is illegal to connect to a server hosted in Russia from your personal computer. Well, everyone's computer at some point is going to connect to a server hosted in Russia for an ad network or for a CDN or just for some stupid bullshit, right? And yeah, that's a good example. You know, you have an air freshener hanging in your car. You can get pulled over for that. Yeah. So it's one of these things where they're obviously not enforcing this against everyone. It's so that you can get Al Capone with the tax code when you can't prove that he's a gangster.
Civil forfeiture is actually a good one.
Yeah, there you go.
If they applied that to everyone, civil forfeiture would have been overturned in the 90s when it was applied. The whole, I can take your stuff without proving that you've committed a crime, that's only used, well, I can't say only used because they have gotten innocent people. They're supposedly only using it on the bad guys. But they use it on people that have money and usually just take enough where it's not worth fighting to get your stuff back. But if they applied it to everyone,
yeah,
it would be overturned.
But yeah, it's only enforced when they feel like it or when they want to get you for something and they can't get you for what they want to get you for because, you know, maybe that's a constitutional right or maybe you're just saying things they don't like, that sort of thing. People getting pulled over for his sweatshirt in the back car shelf because it was obstructing view. Yeah. Ticket money, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So the idea here was that Georgia could copyright, I guess in this case, annotations to their laws. You know, the things that explain how their laws work.
They had a law firm go through their code. They did annotations on it. And the judges were using those annotations, but only the code itself was free to look at. Look at the annotations, you need to pay for it. I remember this story.
Yeah, there it is. Go ahead, BSV.
Oh, it's just the copyright in the clip or quick notes of the laws the judges are using.
Well right.
The
That's
annotations.
The problem.
Part of the law, some of the laws were ambiguous, so the annotation actually clarified what you could or couldn't do.
The problem is that the annotations are what the judges were using to make decisions, so those annotations were effectively law. Those were the code that was being interpreted. And if you're going to say, I am subject to those laws, but I can't see them unless I pay you for them, now, I'm fairly well off. Could I probably afford a set of the Georgia laws if I lived in Georgia? Yeah, probably. But a lot of people can't, especially now. Well, you got everybody out of work because of Winnie the Flu there. So,
I don't think the fee was that much. You don't pay to see the law. The rule book is open for everyone.
I mean, that's kind of, that's kind of a sign of a free society is you know what the laws are.
Or at least have the option to.
Yeah.
I've never looked up the legal code in my state, so that might be breaking all kinds of shit.
I've looked up the legal code of my state several times. Primarily because I was looking at 3D printing firearms and I wanted to understand what was involved with that. And
So right now they're, allegedly cheap, but if there's no ceiling on it, there's nothing to stop them from going the whole like, well, it's $500 to look at the law. If you want to know why we're charging you or taking your shit or just, going full police state, oh, it's right there in the law books. Oh, you can't read those? That's a pity.
Well, that's the thing is if you don't nip this stuff in the bud, it can get out of hand really quick, right? So that was one of the reasons this pissed me off. And for those wondering about the 3D printed guns thing, no, a fully 3D printed gun is stupid. Don't do that. 3D printed plastic is not strong enough to stand up to a bullet, even if it's just a .22. I am aware of the Liberator pistol. I'm also aware of how often those things blow up. Usually a 3D printed gun is a hand grenade with an extremely short fuse. However, the ones I'm looking at are the ones where you cut a barrel and actually put metal parts into it, and you're really just 3D printing like the frame and parts of the mechanics. And I was curious about playing with it and wanted to make sure I wasn't going to violate a law. So yeah, I've actually looked up the legal code in my state. Turns out, 3D printed home constructed firearms like that are more legal than brass knuckles. Or, well, any kind of, I forget what they called it, enhancement weapon.
You're not purchasing it, you're building it.
Yeah, that's true. And I cannot manufacture them for sale. I can't manufacture them with the intention of giving them away as an object of value.
And I think that's kind of hilarious. An object of value. Yeah, this isn't worth shit.
No, they're not going to be worth shit. This is just us screwing around with epoxy and a .22 barrel and, a 3D printed frame.
An object of value is very subjective. I have three movies in my collection because someone else thought they were worthless. And I'm like, sure, I'll take them.
Well, here's the
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because the person that bought it loved the books, watched the movie, thought it was crap. I haven't read all the books. The movie was okay.
Yeah, the movie was all right. Now, here's the question, though. Okay, let's say I make one of these 3D printed 22s, right? And I then decide, well, this is neat, and pull the firing pin out of it and say, here, Madman, have a model. Have a, a 3D printed thing. It's an art. It's not gun. It doesn't have a firing pin in it. Well, if Madman goes and puts a firing pin back in it, or grabs the one I pulled out of it because I threw it in the trash, and he just picks it up and puts it back in there. I didn't give him a gun. I gave him a model.
Well, even if it was a gun, a thing of value, I would not pay for a Liberator. Liberators are stupid. I have actual guns. But if someone gave me a Liberator, I might not throw it away. So see it as a thing of value.
I've thought about printing them just to have as a model. I would never actually fire one for fear of it being a hand grenade with a short fuse.
But that's where the whole thing of value comes in. That's just whim.
Well, it's just loosely written so they can apply it however they want, which you're right, it's whim law. So, it's just one of these things where I looked it up just because I was curious. Like, am I violating a law by doing this? And no, actually. It's probably still not very smart, but it seems like something kind of fun. Honestly, they'll probably sit on a shelf and never get fired, but, that's fine. Wait until metal 3D printers are... They are available for home use, except they're called lathes and mills. And you can get them computer-controlled.
Or just straight casting the current gun you have.
Actually, when I was looking into it, it apparently, because, a Glock frame is already composite... You can just 3D print those and then put the rest of the parts from a stock Glock in them, and it will work fine. And, of course, everybody knows about the AR-15 lower, but apparently those crack after a while because they still vibrate. But Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where it seems like a fun project. Will I ever actually use it? Probably not. Although, I do find the idea amusing of hiding the little single-shot 22s all over the house, like making a ton of them and having them hidden so when somebody breaks in the house. I mean, a 22, it's a 22 short, right? So it's only slightly more intimidating than a Nerf gun. And, you know, you fire the gun at them, you throw the gun at them, you run behind the couch, you get the next one, all these little single shots. I mean, it's stupid as hell, but it's kind of a funny concept, right?
You could line a
trench. It only works if you change your name to Merrill.
Yeah. Mad Men, you went the exact same place. Like, so I'm going to do a trench coat.
They're not that small, though. Well, still. Just bandoliers of them.
Derringer.
Just bandoliers of them. Anyways, back to the Supreme Court story here. The 5-4 ruling splintered the court along the unusual lines and upholds a previous appeals court decision. The Copyright Act grants potent decades-long monopoly protection for original works of authorship. The question in this case is whether that protection extends to the annotations contained in Georgia's official annotated code. We hold that it does not, wrote Chief Justice John Roberts, who joined with fellow conservative Justices Neils Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh and two liberal justices, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. Roberts said the question is to whether the author of the work is the judge or a legislator. If so, then whatever that work that judge or legislator produces is in the course of his judicial or legislative duties is not copyrightable. Justice Clarence Thomas, a Georgia native, wrote a dissent in which he follows from the court's precedents that statutes and regulations cannot be copyrighted, but accompanying notes lacking legal force can be. Well, that's the thing, is lacking legal force. If a judge is using that annotation as how to understand the law, that's legal force, right? Because it's their official annotated code. And I think that's where I disagree with them on that, is it has legal force behind it, therefore it should be open.
Well, the only reason it open is judges were using it. Now, if judges weren't using that annotation, because law offices annotate notes all the time and annotate laws. They're just summaries, but they could get it wrong. Or the judge just might not be using annotations from that law firm. The only reason this is an issue is Georgia was using those annotations.
But this is their official annotations for their code, right? You know, yeah, the fact that the law firm do it's great, but I mean, this was the official code they were the annotations they were recommending judges use, right?
Annotations. The reason that this was an issue is the judges were using them.
Yeah,
but technically, annotations aren't really official. But in this case, it was widely known, and Georgia was admitting that our judges are using these because the law is ambiguous and our legislature has not gone in and corrected anything.
Well, they were basically adopting those annotations as law, correct?
Yeah.
Well, then in that case, they're law. So they have legal force on them. The case before the justices was a dispute between Georgia and public.resource.org Incorporated. The nonprofit is run by Carl Malmond, an internet public domain advocate who argues for free access to legally obtained files. The nonprofit distributed and made available online copies of the official code of Georgia annotated. The state sued in July of 2015, arguing that the annotations include analysis and guidance provided by a third-party publisher and are protected by copyright. Malmond's organization countersued 2 months later, arguing that its activities didn't infringe upon copyright law. Malmond said in email Monday he was happy with the opinion. Now it's time to get to work and make the law more useful and accessible to the people, he wrote. Legislative counsel Richard Ruskell said in email he was reviewing the decision and had no further comment. So
I don't think the state had standing to sue. I think it should have been struck down for that reason as well.
I don't know.
Because the state wasn't the one being harmed. The law firm was.
I just don't like the idea that the state was trying to prevent the publishing of their code. for whatever reason. I don't like that. It's like, no, if this is your code, it needs to be available. I need to be able to see what the laws are. And if the most correct form to do that in this day and age is the internet, great. Put it on the internet. You know, if that is the lowest common denominator publisher, right? The thing that's going to be most available to most people. And if you're trying to protect your laws under copyright, you got a problem.
Now, not saying they're going to be doing something shady, but they're going to be doing something shady.
Yeah. It's sort of like when you're investigating a server and the server admin says, no, you can't look at that server. What server am I going to zero in on?
Or like you join a chat and all of a sudden everyone logs out and the logs start dumping.
Do you know how many times I've seen Slack channels cleared because I joined them?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I was telling you about that. It's like, and they cleared the channel. What the fuck? It's like, what were you guys doing? Nothing. It's like, you know, I have workspace owner rights in Slack. I can just go look at the history of the channel. We were doing nothing.
It's like, we were doing nothing.
You had a bunch of files up there, didn't you? No. Yeah, but you did. No. Were you violating DLP rules? No. Why is your voice getting higher? I don't know. You know. Yeah, basically, rats. They just didn't want to deal with me calling them on their bullshit. I tend to come off as something as a prick at work about some of this stuff, especially where my job is related. So, I mean, I try not to, but I can't turn it off either. So, it's like, I'll talk 3D printing with them. We'll, you know, get into games and shit like that, and then, you know, one of them will post a fucking file into Slack. It's like, you do know those are like just public AWS links and they're counting on people not finding the URLs, right? So don't put shit with customer data in it into Slack, please. Or maybe a file with passwords, please. And then they get all pissy. It's like, but that's the easiest way to do it. Well, it's wrong.
Yeah, writing your passwords down on a sticky note and hiding them under your mouse pad might be the easiest way to do it, but it's fucking wrong, and I will beat you when I find them.
They're going to turn me into a day drinker. I post a link for the next one. I did. This is from East Bay Times, and my last story for tonight. We're not going to read the headline because, it's more fun to get to it in the article. A Thursday evening town hall video conference on sexual violence in the Bay Area was targeted by a hacker who posted a video depicting child sexual abuse in the public meeting, forcing its abrupt end. They broke into the Zoom conference and played kiddie porn on the on a conference about ending sexual violence. I mean, as far as a troll goes, but at the same time, dude, it's going a little far, don't you think?
I think they should have played a snuff film. I could have gotten behind that troll because most of those are fake.
Oh, God.
But kiddie porn?
A little
no.
much. It's a little much.
That's...
It's like when the joke...
Dude, and set him on fire.
It's like when the joke goes just a little too far and everyone at the party stops, you know? The community organized event was intended to allow sexual assault survivors a chance to share their stories in a public forum and allowed Contra Costa residents to question local elected officials about resources and county efforts to fight sexual violence, domestic abuse, and human trafficking. It was held April 30th as a grand finale to a Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Instead, minutes into the meeting, an unidentified user posted what was described by several people with first-hand knowledge of the meeting as extremely graphic child porn video that traumatized numerous attendees. Oh. It has been interpreted as an attack on sexual assault survivors. The content appeared geared towards the meeting's attendees, and the hacker posted the video several times. The organizers, undeterred, were already planning a follow-up event. There are already planning a follow-up event. The The Contra Costa District Attorney is aware of the matter. Spokesperson for the office said, "We are horrified about what occurred during one of our Parton Town Hall events promoting Sexual Assault Awareness Month. The intrusion further emphasizes the importance of programs that combat and prevent sexual violence, including the prosecution of those who exploit children." Yes, whoever made the video, cut their head off with a shovel. The spokesperson, Scott Alonso, said, "We know that the panelists worked hard to put together a wonderful program. We'll be happy to help them put additional security features in place." The meeting was hosted on Zoom. The video group chat application has driven to prominence amid the Great Sneeze Forward pandemic. This incident is truly devastating and appalling, and our user policies explicitly prohibit any obscene, indecent, or illegal or violent activity or content on the platform. We're looking into the specific incident to ensure appropriate action is taken, CJ Lin, spokesperson for Zoom, said in an email. Zoom strongly condemns such behavior and recently updated several features to help our users more easily protect their meetings. The town hall's organizers said that they won't let the hackers' actions deter future town halls. The panelists for Thursday's meeting, including 10 elected officials and sexual assault survivors, were invited to share their stories with the attendees. It was supported by the country's Family Justice Center or county's Family Justice Center, and was to include a presentation by Community Group Solutions, which provides services for sexual assault survivors. Far from the first time public meeting on Zoom has been infiltrated, there have been several reported instances where Zoom so-called Zoom bombers have disrupted meetings with pranks, such as shouting swear words. But in April, Berkeley school officials asked teachers to stop using the video conferencing after two students behaved inappropriately and an adult Zoom bombed an instructional session. We talked about that story, too. Basically, they were using it for remote learning and apparently some people flashed their dick on their webcam in front of a school. Berkeley Unified Superintendent Brett Stevens said police are investigating the adult for illegal activity. Or an adult Zoom bond and instructional. Yeah, some dude got on there and flashed his junk to it was like a middle school class.
I was saying, because like, well, you're talking about Berkeley, and this is like, okay, so it's a bunch of college students from Berkeley. It's like they haven't seen dick before.
No, but this is like,
but if it's
this,
a middle school,
like middle
yeah,
school
okay.
kids.
Yeah, that's no bueno.
Yeah, and the kiddie porn's going a little far. I mean, as far as a troll goes, I get the concept, but yeah, guys, come on.
Also, like, you know, maybe not a snuff film for the rape survivor.
I mean. Folks.
Might go somewhere else with that one.
No. It's not kitty porn.
God.
I draw the line at kitty porn, okay? That shit's evil. Go die in a fire, whoever makes
yeah.
it. Stuff film, toughen the fuck up. It's a video. And honestly, I'm repulsed because pedophiles are evil. Seeing the kiddie porn, if that traumatized you, you're a pansy. It should disturb you. You should be like, that's sick shit. Let's track down this URL. Is there any way we can, I don't know, ghost in the shell this motherfucker and then go put a bullet in his head? But the whole...
Start lower, fire
traumatized,
your
way up. Need therapy! No.
You went full Monty Python there for a second. But on that note, now I'm not so certain how you do it with a public forum, but a lot of the cases with these Zoom bombings, yeah, put a password on the meeting and just make sure it's shared ahead of time. Now, that's not going to help if it's a huge event and everyone has the password, right? But if it's a class, if it's a group, it's something where that you know you're talking about less than 100 people, the idea of emailing everybody, hey, the password for the Zoom meeting is bumblefuck or whatever, or make it something stupid, simple. You know, it's the number
password.
Three. Yeah, password. And, something like that, something people can type in, right? And that'll keep most of these Zoom bombers out because they're just trolling, looking for random open meetings.
Yeah.
Now, this one...
It's pretty much like a chat roulette thing, where it's like, well, I'm going to sit here with my dick out on cam and click to the next random video person that I'm going to hook up with.
Well, there were scripts that were just sequentially going through trying to find open Zoom meetings, so you could find them. Because Zoom just, you know, it's a random URL, and it was a guessable pattern. But, you know, when you're doing a large public forum like that... I don't know how you would go about preventing somebody from abusing it, because that was obviously targeted, right?
Yeah.
They obviously picked their content based on that. But, you know, if it's going to be a public forum, I mean, I guess...
Unless you block, you know, everyone except, you know, the presenter, and, like, the presenter has to implicitly grant rights to... sharing to somebody at a given time.
Well, I was thinking more like you would have the Zoom call would just be for the presenters and for whoever's like reading your questions from like one of those presentation question forums. And then you would just live stream the Zoom meeting on like YouTube or Vimeo or one of those other like this, you know, Twitch or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
That way, okay, the people you want on stage are the ones who can speak and answer questions, and then everybody else has to, like, text their questions in or use a chat room or something so that,
yeah.
You know, if somebody throws a URL out there, you don't necessarily have to click it. Or if, you know, that way somebody's not going to get into the meeting and, you know, start playing horrible videos like that. And again, you password the damn meeting and make sure only the people who should have that password do. Right. So, oh, it's against our policies. Yeah, well, you know, when people are doing trolling and they think they're anonymous on the internet, they really give a flying fuck about your policies.
Yeah. So. Not so much.
Google Meet does that, from what I understand. That's why they use it instead of Zoom. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff out there you could be using instead of Zoom. I'm kind of surprised you're not hearing about schools using like Discord, because I would think you'd have a real easy time getting people in on that, because most of the kids are probably already using it so they can play Fortnite.
Yeah, that's whatever the teachers want to use.
Yeah,
yeah, and I've seen several memes about that already. It's like, you know, some platform most of your students are already familiar with, shunned, some random shit no one's ever heard of out of China. Yeah, let's do that one.
Sounds about right. All right, well, this show's getting long, so let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is pretty cool. I found this is on pentesttools.com and was making the rounds on a couple of the different security subreddits. But this is pretty cool. It's a Python script called TorHostNG, and it's a rewrite of TorGhost. And the guys tested it on Kali and Manjaro, and it should pretty much work on most of your popular Linuxes, including OpenWrt, which I find interesting. So what this thing does is it forces all of your network traffic through Tor, basically as a local proxy instead of, like, you know, most of the Tor browsers and stuff. Anything you do in that browser is going through Tor, but maybe not everything on your system, certainly not. And you might have things like DNS calls and that kind of thing is making it out. Whereas this guy is setting a system-wide proxy, so theoretically, all of your network traffic should be going through Tor. And when I see OpenWrt on this list, that makes me think of the idea of putting this guy on a router, right? So you actually set up a router that physically cannot send any client traffic over anything but Tor. So if you were to get malware or one of the things that tries to do the correlation or something like that, the machine can't do anything even if you get code execution on it, because all of it goes through Tor and it's hardware and it's, you know, locked going through Tor at a network level. Now this, you know, obviously if you run it as just a process on your local host, that may or may not apply. But the idea of seeing it on OpenWrt makes me think about building it sort of like you would do Hunix, where you'd have one machine that's the router and another machine that's actually your client. And, I find that idea interesting.
Yeah, is it kind of like a Tor firewall, for lack of a better term for it?
Exactly. You know, That's exactly what I'm thinking with it. It's like those boxes they use in Ghost in the Shell whenever they gotta, you know, connect to something they don't trust, right?
Yeah. The condom box.
Actually, I'm kind of thinking it would be really cool to grab OpenWrt, throw it on like a Raspi Zero, and put it like in the old CD-ROM drive of like an older laptop, right? So that the laptop has, you know, you set it up however you have to do it. You know, crossover cable, Ethernet, whatever. But so that the laptop could only connect to the internet through the Raspi, and the Raspi is then running this. So that, you know, you go on whatever sketchy Wi-Fi network, and the Raspi is what's, you know, acting as kind of a little mini firewall and piping all of your data either through Tor or a VPN or something like that. But this would certainly be a way to do it.
Yeah, so this is going to be your beater box.
Yeah, there you go. Just, you know, wrap it in saran wrap before you. And finally, for those of you like me who have just been absolutely beaten up at work and you need something to relax, the last thing I have for you in Dojo tonight is that turns out Bob Ross Incorporated has a YouTube channel. And it looks like they have every episode of The Joy of Painting for free on YouTube. Or at least a lot of it. Like, there's definitely more than 10 seasons on here just scrolling through it. And so, yeah, if anybody else here remembers the old Bob Ross stuff and how relaxing that can be. Or if you're into ASMR, I guess. or if you just want to get samples of, you know, Bob Ross and cut it together and make it sound like he's horribly depressed. you know, that'd be
easy. Never a little bit of titanium white here.
We're going to paint a happy little cloud, a happy little pine tree.
Happy little cabin.
We're going to hide this little fish in the wave, but you don't want to hide him too deep in the wave. Poking out here a bit.
But anyways,
I don't know if I can make him sound depressed, but I think I can make him sound weird and creepy.
The depressed one is the, you know, we've got all these different shades in here. We got the light shades and the dark shades. That's kind of like life. You go through the light times and the dark times. You know, I'm kind of waiting on the light times now, but that's the joy of painting.
Paul starts blending into this gray time that keeps going.
Well, okay, maybe don't go too far with the voice editing, but it's kind of cool because they have the whole thing up here, so, or at least a good chunk of it. So that's cool. And, you know, hey, nothing else, you need something to watch while you're, you know, locked up indoors waiting on the zombie plague to go away. But anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on Pure Decking every Thursday. I keep thinking about trying to do a bad Bob Ross impression, and I can't do it. So, of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, the IRC. In the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, the bot, Psychros, DPView, Madmen. And I think Haratz was in there earlier, but it looks like he got kicked out. So he may or may not make it back in before we close the show. Probably not. And that's all I've got for tonight. BSV, closing thoughts.
I'm not held responsible for any zombie plagues outbreak during this time.
Nobody was holding you responsible. Why would we? You know what? We're just going
to... Don't ask questions you don't want answers to.
Fox, closing thoughts.
Well, you know, everyone bought out all the toilet paper, but they didn't buy out all the saran wrap, so I got these cheap laptops off eBay, and I got a couple projects I'm going to be working on to the soothing melody of Bob Ross.
That wasn't creepy at all. Madman, closing thoughts.
If you want entertainment and kind of like documentaries, Modern Marvels are all on YouTube as well.
Oh. Go check out The Craftsman.
And I figured out a way around the whole lack of toilet paper issue. One, I never ran out of it. But if you try to time your craps just before you take a shower, Fox.
I have a bidet, so it's not a problem.
And by bidet, did you steal the sprayer off your sink and just kind of hook it up to the side of the toilet?
No. I just sat in the sink.
What do you think the garbage disposal's for?
When you eat a lot of fiber, obviously, you don't need a poop knife that way.
Oh, just don't go use the toilet before you brush your teeth.
Is that? I'm trying to decide if that's worse than the waffle stump or not. Oh, fuck.
Only when it sprays up out of the other sinkhole.
No! Oh, the dishes.
That's why you always need to remember to put a stopper in that sink before you crap.
Oh, fuck. That's it. I'm done. I've got nothing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Johnson goes down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.